Welcome to In the News on Chris. I'm Jim McPherson, and today I'll be reading from the June 22nd, 2024 edition of The Economist. On the cover of this week's edition, we have a solar panel with a blazing sun just overhead. The caption, Dawn of the Solar Age. And we'll get to the article that this picture was inspired by a little bit later on under the Leaders section. But first, let's take a look at politics this week. Vladimir Putin visited North Korea. The Russian president was given an elaborate welcome before holding talks with Kim Jong-un, the Asian country's dictator. The pair have strengthened their alliance during the war in Ukraine, with North Korea providing Russia with weapons. The West fears that in return, Russia is helping North Korea with its nuclear program. Both leaders signed a mutual defense pact. Mr. Putin then went to Vietnam, where he was also given the full state visit treatment. South Korean soldiers fired warning shots at North Korean troops who had breached the demarcation line in the demilitarized zone that separates the South and the North. It was the second such incident in a week, though South Korea thinks the breaches were accidental. Thaksin Shinawatra, who was deposed as Thailand's prime minister in a coup in 2006 and returned from exile last year, was formally charged with insulting the monarchy. Mr. Thaksin, an influential figure in Thai politics, was granted bail, deferring for now the problematic prospect of sending him to prison. The indictment is one of three politically charged cases that could rock Thai politics. The Constitutional Court has set dates for early July to hear one case that could bring down the Prime Minister, Saretha Thavasin, and another that could ban Move Forward, the main opposition party. Meanwhile, Thailand became the first country in Southeast Asia to legalize same-sex marriage after the upper house of parliament overwhelmingly approved the measure. The king now needs to sign the bill, paving the way for gay weddings later this year. A global summit to shore up support for Ukraine in its fight against Russia ended without securing the agreement of the big non-aligned countries. China stayed away from the gathering in Switzerland, and countries such as India, Indonesia, Mexico, Saudi Arabia, and South Africa did not sign the final communique. Jens Stoltenberg, the Secretary General of NATO, said that 23 of the alliance's 32 members would meet a target of spending at least 2% of GDP on defense this year. This is up from just three countries in 2014 and 10 in 2023. Mr. Stoltenberg was in Washington to discuss next month's NATO summit, which is expected to reach a deal on providing security assistance and training to Ukraine. Meanwhile, Mark Rutte, the outgoing Dutch prime minister, looked to set to succeed Mr. Stoltenberg as NATO's leader in October. Jordan Bardella, the president of the hard-right National Rally, or RN, in France, urged voters to hand his party an absolute majority at snap elections called for June 30th and July 7th. Polling shows the RN's parliamentary party, which is led by Marine Le Pen, winning the most seats but falling short of a majority. Bruno Le Maire, the finance minister, subtly criticized Emmanuel Macron's decision to call the election, saying it had caused, quote, worries, incomprehension, sometimes anger, unquote, among French people. The Israeli Defense Forces said that it would hold a daily tactical pause of military activity on a road in the south of Gaza to allow more aid to enter the territory through the Kerem Shalom crossing. Benjamin Netanyahu, Israel's prime minister, denounced the decision. The IDF made it clear that this did not amount to a ceasefire. It said that fighting would continue in Rafah, where eight soldiers were killed recently. Mr. Netanyahu released a video criticizing the Biden administration for its treatment of Israel during the current war in Gaza. He said that it was inconceivable that America had been, quote, withholding weapons and ammunitions, unquote, in recent months. The White House said that it did not know what the prime minister was talking about, stressing that only one shipment of heavy bombs had been delayed. After the departure of Benny Gantz and Gadi Eisenkot, Mr. Netanyahu dissolved his 6-member war cabinet. Some of the decisions previously made by the war cabinet will now fall to the larger security cabinet, which includes some of Mr. Netanyahu's far-right allies. At least 550 people died during the Hajj, the annual pilgrimage to Mecca in Saudi Arabia, as temperatures in the city hit 51.8 degrees centigrade, or 125 degrees Fahrenheit. Around 1.8 million Muslims are expected to travel to the site for the pilgrimage this year. A ship that was attacked recently by Houthi insurgents from Yemen sank in the Red Sea, the second vessel that the rebels have sunk since starting their campaign to disrupt shipping last November. One crewman died in the incident. The Houthis used a drone boat packed with explosives. Senegal joined the Club of African Oil Producers as the country's first offshore project commenced production after a string of delays. The new government of Bassirou Diomaye Faye, Senegal's left-leading nationalist president, hopes the nascent oil and gas industry will enable it to invest more heavily in its priorities, such as agriculture. The UN Security Council adopted a resolution ordering the Rapid Support Forces, a rebellious Sudanese paramilitary group, to lift its siege of El Fasher in the Darfur region. It also called for a halt in fighting between the RSF and the official Sudanese armed forces. The resolution, which passed after Russia abstained, points to a hardening of international opinion against the RSF amid concerns that it and allied Arab militias are conducting genocide in Darfur. Joe Biden announced new legal protections for migrants who are in America illegally but married to American citizens. The new system streamlines the process of applying for permanent residency, but applicants must have lived in the United States for at least 10 years. Around 500,000 spouses could potentially benefit in one of the most significant presidential actions on immigration in a decade. Louisiana's Governor Jeff Landry signed a bill that obligates classrooms in the state to display the Ten Commandments. The mandate does not come into effect until next year and will face numerous legal challenges from secularists who argue it contradicts the constitutional split between church and state. Large protests were held in Brazil against a proposed change to the law that would equate abortions after 22 weeks to homicide. Conservatives in Congress support the bill, but critics note that late abortions are often performed on children who were abused by relatives. Abortion is legal in Brazil only in cases of rape, fetal deformation, and when the woman's life is in danger. Venezuela's opposition coalition said that 4 more of its activists had been arrested ahead of the presidential election on July 28th. Dozens of opposition figures have been detained this year on bogus conspiratorial claims. Polling suggests that Nicolas Maduro, the authoritarian president, would heavily lose a free and fair vote. Ecuador will temporarily suspend visa waivers for Chinese nationalists from July 1st as tens of thousands of migrants travel to the country en route to the United States. Ecuador is only one of 2 South American countries that grant visa-free travel to Chinese visitors. Suriname is the other. From there, they often head north. The number of Chinese nationals trying to cross the U.S. border has rocketed since 2022. Remaining in the June 22, 2024 edition of The Economist, let's move on to business this week. Dave Calhoun, Boeing's CEO, was questioned by American senators about recent safety incidents involving his company's planes, such as the blowout of a door panel on a 737 MAX. Richard Blumenthal, the chairman of the committee investigating the failures, described Boeing as, quote, an iconic company that somehow lost its way, unquote. Mr. Calhoun, who is stepping down, apologized for the recent incidents and 2 earlier fatal crashes. Meanwhile, the latest whistleblower to make a complaint revealed that Boeing lost track of 400 faulty parts and that some of them may have been installed on planes. Boeing's share price is down by 30% this year. NVIDIA overtook Microsoft and Apple to become the world's most valuable company, with a stock market value of more than $3.3 trillion. The maker of chips for artificial intelligence has seen its share price surge by 40% since issuing bumper quarterly revenues and profits a month ago, and expects sales to increase from the rollout of its Blackwell chip, billed as the world's most powerful. NVIDIA is one of only a dozen companies to lead the S&P 500 since its creation in 1926. It recently split its stock, lowering the share price to make it more attractive to small investors. Broadcom's share price also hit new highs after the chipmaker announced a 10-for-1 stock split that comes into effect in July. Over the past few years, big tech companies have been using stock splits to dilute the price of their surging shares, though Meta and Microsoft have notably not done so. A study by the IMF said that the sheer scale and speed of the transformation in AI would amplify job losses, reducing the share of labor income in national accounts and exacerbating inequality. It called on governments to prepare social systems that will, quote, cushion the transition costs for workers, unquote. The Bank of England held its main interest rate steady at 5.25%. The day before the decision, new figures showed headline annual inflation in Britain dropping to 2% in May, bang on the bank's target, though the core rate, excluding food and energy, was 3.5%, and inflation for services didn't fall as much as expected. The bank's next monetary policy meeting is on August 1st, after a general election that is expected to usher Labor into power. A judge in Texas dismissed what remained of ExxonMobil's lawsuit against activist investors over its emissions targets. Arjuna Capital and Follow This had proposed a proxy vote on quickening the pace of Exxon's emission cuts, but they dropped the proposal when it threatened to sue, claiming they were abusing the proxy system. The judge ruled that the case against Arjuna was now invalid, as it had pledged not to refile the motion. He had already removed Follow This from the suit. Tesla submitted a letter to a judge in Delaware asking for new legal arguments on Elon Musk's 2018 pay deal, after 77% of the company's shareholders backed the package at their annual meeting. In January, the judge voided the package in a case brought by a dissident shareholder who claimed the sum, now worth around $46 billion, was too large. Tesla says the vote backing Mr. Musk's pay significantly impacts the issue. But lawyers for the dissident investor insist the vote has no legal impact. Fisker, a maker of electric vehicles, filed for bankruptcy protection in America. The company went public in 2020 amid a wave of optimism in the industry, but its sales never took off. Fisker was delisted by the New York Stock Exchange recently because its share price was, quote, abnormally low, unquote. Toyota Akio's reappointment as chairman of Toyota won the support of just 72% of shareholders, down from 85% last year. Two big proxy advisors had recommended voting against Mr. Toyota for failure to oversee the proper certification process on some vehicles. It was a rare instance of a rebellion in corporate Japan. The ownership structure of Heathrow was overhauled following the decision of Ferrovial, the infrastructure group, to sell down its stake. Ardian, a French private equity firm, is now the airport's largest shareholder with a 22.6% stake. Saudi Arabia's sovereign wealth fund is taking 15%. The other big investor is the Qatar Investment Authority, with a 20% holding. Heathrow's chairman, Lord Dighton, is also chairman of The Economist's parent company. Singapore returned to the top spot in an annual ranking of competitiveness among 67 countries compiled by IMD, a business school. The city-state last topped the poll in 2020. Switzerland came second, and Denmark, last year's champion of efficiency, came third. America dropped 3 places to 12th spot. China climbed 7 places to 14th. Venezuela took the wooden spoon. Employees from Chessify, an online chess platform, won the World Corporate Chess Championship in New York, beating a team from Chessmood, another platform. Banks and financial firms, including BlackRock and Goldman Sachs, took part in the rapid round format, though only 2, Susquehanna and UBS, made it through to the semifinals. A team from Google came second bottom in the group. And now for the article that inspired the cover of the June 22, 2024 edition of The Economist, The Solar Age. The exponential growth of solar power will change the world. An energy-rich future is within reach. It is 70 years since AT&T's Bell Labs unveiled a new technology for turning sunlight into power. The phone company hoped it could replace the batteries that run equipment in out-of-the-way places. It also realized that powering devices with light alone showed how science could make the future seem wonderful, hence a press event at which sunshine kept a toy Ferris wheel spinning round and round. Today, solar power is long past the toy phase. Panels now occupy an area around half that of Wales, and this year they will provide the world with about 6% of its electricity, which is almost 3 times as much electricity energy as America consumed back in 1954. Yet this historic growth is only the second most remarkable thing about the rise of solar power. The most remarkable is that it is nowhere near over. To call solar power's rise exponential is not hyperbole, but a statement of fact. Installed solar capacity doubles roughly every 3 years, and so grows tenfold each decade. Such sustained growth is seldom seen in anything that matters. That makes it hard for people to get their heads around what is going on. When it was a tenth of its current size 10 years ago, solar power was still seen as marginal even by experts who knew how fast it had grown. The next tenfold increase will be equivalent to multiplying the world's entire fleet of nuclear reactors by 8 in less than the time it typically takes to build just a single one of them. Solar cells will, in all likelihood, be the single biggest source of electrical power on the planet by the mid-2030s. By the 2040s, they may be the largest source not just of electricity, but of all energy. On current trends, the all-in cost of electricity they produce promises to be less than half as expensive as the cheapest available today. This will not stop climate change, but could slow it a lot faster. Much of the world, including Africa, where 600 million people still cannot light their homes, will begin to feel energy rich. That feeling will be a new and transformational one for humankind. To grasp that this is not some environmentalist fever dream, consider solar economics. As the cumulative production of a manufactured good increases, costs go down. As costs go down, demand goes up. As demand goes up, production increases, and costs go down further. This cannot go on forever. Production, demand, or both always become constrained. In earlier energy transitions from wood to coal, coal to oil, or oil to gas, the efficiency of extraction grew, but it was eventually offset by the cost of finding ever more fuel. As our essay this week explains, solar power faces no such constraint. The resources needed to produce solar cells and plant them on solar farms are silicon-rich sand, sunny places, and human ingenuity, all three of which are abundant. Making cells also takes energy, but solar power is fast, making that abundant too. As for demand, it is both huge and elastic. If you make electricity cheaper, people will find uses for it. The result is that, in contrast to earlier energy sources, solar power has routinely become cheaper and will continue to do so. Other constraints do exist. Given people's proclivity for living outside daylight hours, solar power needs to be complemented with storage and supplemented by other technologies. Heavy industry and aviation and freight have been hard to electrify. Fortunately, these problems may be solved as batteries and fuels created by electrolysis gradually become cheaper. Another worry is that the vast majority of the world's solar panels and almost all of the purified silicon from which they are made come from China. Its solar industry is highly competitive, heavily subsidized, and is outstripping current demand. Quite an achievement given all the solar capacity China is installing within its own borders. This means that Chinese capacity is big enough to keep the expansion going for years to come, even if some of the companies involved go to the wall and some investment dries up. In the long run, a world in which more energy is generated, without the oil and gas that come from unstable or unfriendly parts of the world, will be more dependable. Still, although the Chinese Communist Party cannot rig the price of sunlight as OPEC tries to rig that of oil, the fact that a vital industry resides in a single hostile country is worrying. It is a concern that America feels keenly, which is why it has put tariffs on Chinese solar equipment. However, because almost all the demand for solar panels still lies in the future, the rest of the world will have plenty of scope to get into the market. America's adoption of solar energy would be frustrated by a pro-fossil fuel Trump presidency, but only temporarily and painfully. It could equally be enhanced if America released pent-up demand by making it easier to install panels on homes and to join the grid. The country has a terawatt of new solar capacity waiting to be connected. Carbon prices would help, just as they did in the switch from coal to gas in the European Union. The aim should be for the virtuous cycle of solar power production to turn as fast as possible. That is because it offers the prize of cheaper energy. The benefits start with a boost to productivity. Anything that people use energy for today will cost less, and that includes pretty much everything. Then come the things cheap energy will make possible. People who could never afford to will start lighting their houses or driving a car. Cheap energy can purify water and even desalinate it. It can drive the hungry machinery of artificial intelligence. It can make billions of homes and offices more bearable in summers that will, for decades to come, be getting hotter. But it is the things that nobody has yet thought of that will be most consequential. In its radical abundance, cheaper energy will free the imagination, setting tiny Ferris wheels of the mind spinning with excitement and new possibilities. This week marks the summer solstice in the Northern Hemisphere. The sun rising to its highest point in the sky will, in decades to come, shine down on a world where nobody need go without the blessings of electricity and where the access to energy invigorates all those it touches. Remaining in the June 22, 2024 edition of The Economist and moving on to the United States section where the lead headline reads, Republicans are favored to win the Senate. What would they do? Donald Trump's visit to Capitol Hill on June 13th served as a reminder that, whatever the candidate promises, Congress will have a critical role in shaping policy if he returns to the White House. Although Republicans largely support their presumptive nominee and his program, the finer points of a potential second-term agenda remain up for debate. The Economist's election forecast model reckons that Donald Trump is more likely than not to retake the presidency. A Trump victory would probably be accompanied by Republicans gaining control of the Senate and perhaps expanding their majority in the House. Congressional Republicans are already considering the art of the possible if they do so. Their legislative aspirations would be limited by the filibuster, a tradition that requires 60 votes in the 100-seat Senate to approve much legislation. Republican institutionalists are loath to ditch it. Their agenda is also limited by reduced ambitions. Republicans no longer talk about entitlement reform or sweeping changes to health care, yet the party could still dramatically shift the country's fiscal trajectory thanks to a parliamentary procedure known as reconciliation, which allows the Senate to use a simple majority to change spending and revenue. That is particularly important next year, with many of Trump's first-term tax cuts set to expire. Rate cuts for individuals and estates, along with several changes for business, will lapse by the end of 2025. Some 60% of American households would then send bigger checks to the tax man each year. Simply extending the law would increase the deficit by around $4 trillion over the next 10 years, according to the Joint Committee on Taxation. The seemingly impossible task is to deliver a politically viable bill that encourages growth without expanding America's already massive deficit, which exceeded 6% of GDP in 2023. Many Senate Republicans have plans to build on Mr. Trump's 2017 legislation. Quote, "I was not a real big fan," unquote, Ron Johnson, a Republican senator from Wisconsin, says of the bill he voted for 7 years ago. While the headline corporate rate fell from 35% to 21%, changes to deductions for small business owners left some paying more. Mr. Johnson believes the party needs to embrace a paradigm shift and radically simplify the tax code. Others are discussing how to create more predictability for business while retaining aspects of the law that encourage investment. A relatively young but growing faction emphasizes support for workers. Jim Banks, a congressman expected to win Indiana's Senate race this year, has expressed dissatisfaction that the corporate rate cut was permanent, whereas reductions for individuals were not. And Marco Rubio, a Republican senator from Florida and longtime child tax credit advocate, says, quote, "Allowing families to keep more of their hard-earned money is not only fair but absolutely essential to helping them recover from the Biden years," unquote. Jason Smith, chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, said in May that, quote, "very well-known conservative," unquote, Republicans are even open to increasing the corporate rate. Two complicating factors could frustrate any effort to reduce America's deficit. The first is Mr. Trump, who during a recent speech vowed to eliminate taxes on tips. That is politically savvy in the service industry-powered swing state of Nevada, but would be expensive. The second complication is the House, where tax legislation originates. The size of any Republican majority there would be pivotal. The fiscal question could affect another priority, defense spending. John Kennedy, a Republican senator from Louisiana, sees this as inextricably linked. On the one hand, America must deal with, quote, "authoritarians throughout the world who want to kill us and drink our blood out of a boot," unquote. On the other, quoting again, "you're trying to control your debt, grow your economy, and pay for an older population," unquote. He says reducing wasteful spending is essential. Robert Wicker, the top Republican on the Senate Armed Services Committee, recently called for America to increase defense spending to 5% of GDP, up from a projected 2.9% in 2024. All three of Mr. Trump's first-term Supreme Court picks are under 60. Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito, who would be in their late 70s by the end of a second Trump term, could retire. Anyone wondering why Republicans stick by Mr. Trump through everything need only remember that, if he wins, a majority of Supreme Court justices could be Trump appointees well into the 2040s. And that's all the time we have for readings from the June 22, 2024 edition of The Economist. I'm Jim McPherson. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.